Ari bent over Fang's body, his muzzle open, canines sharp and ready to tear Fang's throat. "Had enough?" he growled viciously. "Of life?" "Oh God, oh God, not Fang, not Fang, not Fang."
"Ari."
My eyes went wide. I knew that voice too well. Jep, my adopted father, now my worst enemy. Chapter 117. I stared with the fiercest, most righteous anger and hatred as Jeb Batchelder easily moved through the crowd of erasers, parting them as if he were Moses and they were the Red Sea. It was still bizarre to see him. I'd been so used to mourning, not despising him. Ari paused, his rank and deadly mouth open over Fang's neck. Fang was unconscious, but still breathing.
"Ari," Jeb said again, "you have your orders."
Jeb walked toward me, keeping one eye on Ari. After endless seconds, Ari slowly, slowly drew back from Fang, leaving his body crumpled unnaturally on the sand. Jeb stopped in front of me. He'd saved my life more than once. He'd saved all our lives. Taught me to read, how to make scrambled eggs, how to hotwire cars. Once I'd depended on him as if he were the very breath in my lungs. He was my one constant, my one certainty.
"Do you get it now, Max?"
he asked softly.
"Do you see the incredible beauty of the game? No child, no adult, no one has ever experienced anything like what you're feeling. Do you see why all this is necessary?"
The eraser holding me peeled his fingers away from my mouth so I could speak. Instantly, I spit hard, clearing my mouth and throat of tears. I hit Jeb's shoe. "No," I said, keeping my voice steady, though everything in me was shrieking, desperate to run to Fang. "I don't get it. I'll never get it. I want to get out of it." His heartbreakingly familiar face looked strained, as if he was losing patience with me.
"Tough. I told you. You're going to save the world," he said. "That's the purpose of your existence. Do you think an ordinary, untrained 14-year-old could do that? No. You've got to be the best, the strongest, the smartest. You've got to be the ultimate. Maximum."
I yawned and rolled my eyes, knowing he'd hate that. And Jeb's jaw tightened in anger.
"Do not fail," he said, a hard note in his voice. "You did okay in New York, but you made serious, rather stupid mistakes. Mistakes cost you. Make better decisions."
"You're not my dad anymore, Jeb," I said, putting as much annoying snideness into my tone as possible. "You're not responsible for me. I do what I like. I named myself Maximum Ride."
"I'll always be responsible for you," he snapped. "If you think you're actually running your own life, then maybe you're not as bright as I thought you were."
"Make up your mind," I snapped back. "Either I'm the greatest or I'm not. Which is it?" He motioned with his hand, and the erasers let me and Iggy go. Ari turned and smirked at me, then blew me a kiss. I spit at him. "Daddy always loved me best," I hissed, and his face darkened. He took a fast step toward me, paws coiled into fists, but was pushed along by a rough, hairy wave of other erasers. They swept him up and shuffled off around the large boulder at the end of our beach. Jeb was with them. No, he was one of them. Chapter 118. Stumbling badly, my shoulder feeling like it was on fire, I made my way down the beach. Before I moved Fang, I felt his neck to see if it was broken. Then I carefully turned him over. Blood trickled from his mouth. "Fang, you have to wake up," I whispered. The others ran over.
"He looks really bad," Gazzy said. "He should see a doctor."
Nothing seemed broken, maybe his nose, but he was still out cold. I lifted his head into my lap and used my sweatshirt to dab at the bloody stripes on his face.
"We could carry him, you and me," said Iggy, his long, pale hands floating over Fang, cataloging bruises, lumps, blood. Where to? I asked, hearing my bitterness. It's not like we can check him into a hospital.
No hospital,
Feng mumbled, his eyes still shut. Relief flooded through me. Feng, I said. How bad?
Pretty bad,
he said fuzzily. Then, groaning, he tried to shift to one side. Don't move, I told him, but he turned his head and spit blood out onto the sand. He raised his hand and spit something into it, then opened his eyes blearily.
Tooth, he said in disgust. Feel like crap,
Feng added, touching the knots on the back of his head. I tried to smile. You look like a kitty cat. I made whisker motions on my face, indicating where Ari had raked his. He looked at me sourly.
Feng,
I said, my voice breaking.
Just live, okay? Live, be okay.
With no warning, I leaned down and kissed his mouth, just like that.
Ow,
he said, touching his split lip. Then he and I stared at each other in shock. Mortification heated my face. I glanced up to see Nudge and the gas man gaping at me. Luckily, Iggy was blind. An angel was getting Feng water. Gazzy looked from me to Feng to Iggy, clearly thinking that he was sunk, now that I had obviously severed all ties with reality. Slowly, Feng levered himself into a sitting position, his jaw tight, sweat breaking out on his face.
Man, he said and coughed. This feels pretty bad.
It was about the most he'd ever admitted to, pain-wise. He stood clumsily and took the water from Angel. Taking a swig, he rinsed his mouth and spit it out onto the sand.
I'm going to kill Ari, Feng said.
Chapter 119. Feng and the rest of us made it back to Manhattan without dropping out of the sky due to injury, exhaustion, or both. You macho thing, you, I said when we finally landed in the darkness of Central Park. He looked worn out, clammy, and pale, but he had flown all the way with no complaint.
That's me,
he said, but he gave me a long look, like, I haven't forgotten what you did, meaning, the kiss. I blushed furiously, embarrassed beyond belief. I would never live that down.
Are you really okay, Feng?
Nudge asked, the most touching concern in her voice. Nudge doted on Feng. He looked like he'd fallen off a cliff, with huge purple bruises distorting his face, the awful scratches Ari had left on his cheeks, the stiff, pained way he moved.
I'm cool, he said. Flying helped loosen me up some.
Look, let's find a place to hunker down, catch some Z's, and then take another shot at the Institute, I said. We've got to figure it out. We can't stop now. Right, guys?
Yeah, right, Nudge said. Let's do it. Get it over with. I want to know about my mom and other stuff. I want to know the whole story, good or bad.
Me too, said Gazzy. I want to find my parents so I can tell them what total scuzzes they are. Like, hi, Mom and Dad, you're such scum.
I decided we'd better stay underground for safety's sake. In the subway station, we jumped off the platform and walked quickly along the tracks. It looked familiar. And sure enough, a few minutes walking brought us to a huge, fire-lit cavern populated by homeless people and misfits. Home sweet home, especially if you happen to be a sewer rat.
Boy, does this look inviting,
Feng said, rubbing his hands together. I made a face at him as we climbed up onto the concrete ledge. Inside, I was glad he had enough energy to be sarcastic. Suddenly exhausted and emotionally wiped, I held out my left fist to make our bedtime stack. We did our thing. Then Angel snuggled next to me. I checked to make sure the others, especially Feng, were okay. Then I lay down, letting despair cover me like a blanket. I was in the middle of another sleep-driven brain explosion when I felt myself surface to consciousness without opening my eyes. Not analyzing the impulse, I shot out my hand and grabbed someone's wrist. Moving fast, still on instinct, I sat up and twisted the intruder's arm behind his back, my senses roaring to life. "Cool it, sucker!" the arm's owner whispered furiously. I yanked upward, threatening to pop his arm out of its socket. I definitely could have done it. Fang creaked upright next to me, his eyes alert, but his body moving stiffly. "You're screwing with my Mac again," said the hacker, and I loosened my hold on him. "Geez, what happened to you?" directed at Fang.
"Cut myself shaving," Fang said.
The hacker frowned and rubbed his shoulder where I'd strained it. "Why'd you come back here?" he asked angrily. "You're totally wrecking my hard drive." "Let me see," I said, and he grumpily opened his laptop. The screen was covered with the inside of my head. Images, words, photos, maps, mathematical equations. The hacker scowled, seeming more perplexed than mad, though. "It's weird," he said. "You guys don't have a computer with you?"
"No," Fang said. "Not even a cell phone."
"What about a Palm Pilot?" the hacker asked. "Nope," I said. "We're kind of more low-tech than that. Like, having Kleenex would be a huge step for us." "A memory chip?" he persisted. I froze. Almost against my will, I slid my gaze over to Fang. "What kind of memory chip?" I asked, striving for casual. "Anything," the hacker said. "Anything that would have data on it that would interfere with my hard drive." "If we did have a chip," I said carefully, "could you access it?" "If I knew what it was," he said. "Maybe. What do you have?" "It's small and square," I said, not looking at him. "Like this?" The hacker held his fingers about 3 inches apart. "Smaller." His fingers were a half inch apart. "You have a memory chip this small?" I nodded. "Let me see. Where is it?" I took a deep breath. "In me. It's implanted in me. I saw it on an X-ray." He stared at me with horror in his eyes. He turned off his laptop and closed the lid. "You have a memory chip that small, implanted in you?" he verified. I nodded, guessing this was somewhat worse than having cooties. He took several steps back. "A chip like that is bad news," he said slowly, as if I were stupid. "It might be NSA. I won't mess with it. Look, you stay away from me. Next thing, they'll be after me." He backed away into the darkness, his hands up as if to ward off evil. "I hate them. Hate them." Then he was gone, back into the bowels of the tunnels.
"See ya," I whispered. "Wouldn't want to be ya."
Fang looked at me irritably.
"Can't I take you anywhere?"
I so wished he weren't all banged up, so I could whack him. Chapter 120. We tried to get some sleep. God knows we needed it. I kind of dozed off. Then I wasn't asleep. I knew that much. But I wasn't awake, exactly. I'd been, like, sucked into another dimension, where I could feel my body, sort of, knew where I was, and yet was powerless to move or speak. I was in a movie, starring me, watching it all happen around me. I was going down a dark tunnel, or the tunnel was slipping by me and I was staying still. Trains were rushing past me on both sides, so it was a subway tunnel. I was thinking, okay, subway tunnel. Yeah, so? Then I saw a train station, 33rd Street. The Institute's building was on 31st Street. In the darkness of the waking dream subway tunnel, I saw a filthy, rusted-over grate. I saw myself pulling the grate up. Fetid brown water gurgled below. Blech. It was the sewer system beneath the city. Hello. Beneath a rainbow.
"Bingo, Max,"
said my voice. My eyes popped wide open. Fang was watching me with concern.
"Now what?"
"I know what we have to do," I said. "Wake everyone up." Chapter 121. "This way," I said, walking in the darkness of the tunnels. It was as if a detailed map was imprinted on my retinas, so I could see it laid over reality, tracing the path we needed to follow. If this map effect was part of my life forever, I would go nuts. But right now, it was dang useful. One other thing I guess I should mention. I was really, really afraid now. More afraid than I'd ever been before, and I didn't even know why. Maybe I didn't want to know the truth. Also, my head was throbbing, and that had me a little crazy too. Was I approaching my expiration date? Was I going to die? Was I just going to fall over and be gone from the world and my friends? Did the voice tell you about this, Max? Nudge poked at me and asked. Kind of, I answered.
Great,
I heard Iggy mutter, but I ignored him. Every step was bringing us closer to the Institute. I could feel it. We were finally about to have our questions answered, and also possibly fight the worst fight of our lives. But our curiosity was so compelling. Who were we? How had they taken us from our parents? Who had grafted avian DNA into us and why? My mind shied away from the parent question. I really didn't know if I could stand to find out. But everything in me burned to know the other whys and wherefores. I wanted names. I wanted to know who was accountable. I wanted to know where they lived. Okay, now the tunnel splits, I said. And we take the one with no tracks. Angel's hand was in mine, small and trusting. The gas man was still dopey with sleep, occasionally stumbling. Iggy had one finger in Fang's belt loop. We were looking for a rusted grate set in the floor. In my dream, I had seen it at the crossroads of two tunnels, so it had to be here. But I didn't see it. I stopped, and the others stopped behind me. It has to be here, I said under my breath, peering into the darkness.
Don't think about what has to be, Max. Think about what is.
I set my jaw. Can't you just tell me stuff straight out? I thought. Why did everything have to be like,
what is the sound of one hand clapping and all?
But okay, what was here then? I closed my eyes and just sensed where I was, consciously letting any impression at all come to me. I felt like such a total dweeb. Then I just walked forward, eyes shut, trying to sense where we should go. Instinctively, I felt I should stop. So I stopped. I looked down. There, at my feet, was the dim outline of a large, rusted grate. Well, aren't you special, I told myself. It's over here, I called. The grate pulled up easily, its screws disintegrating into rusty powder as Fang, Iggy, and I pulled. It came loose, and we set it aside. Below it was a manhole with rusted U-shaped handholds set into one side. I lowered myself over the edge and started climbing down into the sewer system of New York City.
What a destiny.
Finally, I had to ask the voice a question. Had to ask. Am I going to die? Is that what this is all about? There was a pause. A long one. Really agonizing. The worst. Then the voice decided to answer.
Yes, Max. You are going to die. Just like everybody else.
Thank you, Confucius. Chapter 122. This may surprise you, but the sewer system of a burg with 8 million people is even less delightful than you might imagine. We climbed down the manhole one by one and ended up standing on a grimy tiled ledge maybe 2 feet wide. Above us, the tunnel curved around some 14 feet across, and below our ledge was a swiftly moving current of filthy wastewater.
Blech, said Nudge. This is so gross. When we get out of here, I want someone to spray me with, like, disinfectant.
Angel stuffed Celeste up under her shirt.
Max, said the gas man, are those, rats?
Lovely. Yes, those do appear to be either rats or mice on steroids, I said briskly, trying not to shriek and climb the walls like a girly girl.
Jeez, said Iggy with disgust. You'd think they'd want to live in a park or something.
Ahead of us was a four-way intersection of tunnels, like a big cross. I hesitated, then turned left. Several minutes later, I stopped, completely and utterly without a clue. Hello, voice? I thought. A little help here, please? I had no hope that the voice would respond, but if it did, it would probably say something like, if a tree falls in a forest, does it still? I looked down, then sucked in my breath so fast I almost choked. I was standing on a translucent platform suspended high over the sewer system. I wanted to scream, feeling off balance and scared. Below me, I could see another Max, looking like a deer caught in headlights, and the rest of the flock staring at me. Fang reached out and took the other Max's arm, and I felt it. But no one was with me.
When are you going to trust me, Max? Said the voice. When are you going to trust yourself?
Maybe when I don't feel completely bonkers, I snarled. I swallowed hard and tried to get a grip. Tentatively, I glanced down again at the translucent surface. As I watched, faint lines of light tracked the path behind us, where we'd already been. Then the lines continued through the tunnels, like a neon this way sign. Quickly, I glanced up, but saw only the yucky yellow-tiled arch covered with mold, no glass ceiling. Fang was still holding my arm, looking at me intently. I gave him an embarrassed smile. You must be so sick of looking at me with concern.
It is getting stale, he said. What happened? This time, I mean.
I don't even want to explain, I said, wiping clammy sweat off my forehead. You'd have me committed to a madhouse. I stepped carefully around him and led the others forward. Some sections of the tunnel were dimly lit from open grates high above us. Other parts were dark and dismal, but I was never lost, never uncertain. And after what felt like miles, I stopped again because it felt like it was time to. 'Cause, like, the feng shui was right, you know? Ugh. As we stood staring around ourselves in the darkness, avoiding our chittering little rat friends, I saw why we were there. Set into one cruddy, disgusting sewer wall was an almost completely hidden gray metal door. We're here, gang. We made it. Chapter 123. Don't get too excited. The door was locked, of course. Okay, guys, I said softly. Can any of us open locks with our minds? Speak up now. No one could. Iggy, then. I moved out of the way and pulled him gently to the door. His sensitive fingers reached out and skimmed the door, feeling its almost indistinguishable edges hovering around the keyhole.
Like someone was going to come down here with a key.
Okay, Iggy muttered. He pulled his little lockpicking kit out of his pocket, as I knew he would, even though I had confiscated it for forever only 2 months ago after he picked the lock on my closet at home. Home. Don't even think about it. You no longer have a home. You're homeless. Carefully, Iggy selected a tool, changed his mind, took out another one. Angel shifted from foot to foot, looking nervously at the rats, who were growing creepily curious about us. They're going to bite us, she whispered, clutching my hand, patting Celeste through her grimy shirt. I can read their minds, too. No, sweetie, I said softly. They're just afraid of us. They've never seen such huge, ugly creatures before, and they want to check us out. I was rewarded with a tiny smile. We're ugly to them, right? It took Iggy 3 minutes, which was a personal record for him, breaking the old 4.5-minute record required by the 3 locks on my closet. Iggy, Fang, and I gripped the edge of the door with our fingernails and pulled. There was no doorknob. Slowly, slowly, the immensely heavy door creaked open, revealing a long, dark, endless staircase ahead of us. Going down. Of course.
Yeah, this is what we needed, Fang muttered. A staircase going down to the dark place.
Iggy blew out his breath, less than thrilled. You first, Max. I put my foot on the first step.
You're on your own now, Max, said the voice. See you later.
Chapter 124. My headache was back, worse than before. Let's keep it moving, I called over my shoulder.
Unlike the sewer, there wasn't even far-off light on the stairs, so it was pitch black. Fortunately, we could all see pretty well in the dark, especially Iggy. The steps seemed endless, and there was no handrail. I guess whoever built this wasn't too concerned with safety.
"Do you know what you're doing?"
Fang asked softly.
"We're approaching our destination," I said, descending into the darkness. "We're homing in on the answers we've dreamed about getting our whole lives."
"We're doing what your voice has told us to do,"
he said. I was wary.
"Yeah? The voice has been okay so far, right?"
There was a bottom at last.
"Here we are," I said, my heart pounding.
"There's a wall in front of you," said Iggy.
I reached out in the darkness, and a few feet away, my outstretched fingers touched a wall, then a door, then a doorknob.
"Door," I said. "Might need you, Iggy."
I turned the knob just to see, and lo and behold, the door began to open. We were all silent. The door swung all the way open without a sound, and a gentle wash of fresh, cool air wafted over us. After the fetid, dank stench of the sewers, it was amazing. Feeling like Alice in Wonderland falling down the rabbit hole, I stepped forward, my filthy shoes sinking into the thick carpet. Yes, carpet. Dim lights showed me another door, and, almost shrieking with tension, I opened it. This all suddenly seemed horribly easy, suspiciously easy, scarily easy. We went through this second door, then stopped and stared. We were in a lab just like the one back at the school, thousands of miles away in California.
"We're in the Institute," I said.
Is that a good thing?" asked Gazzy.
Chapter 125.
"Holy," insert a swear word of your choice here, Fang said, stunned.
"No kidding," I said.
There were banks of computers taller than me, and tables with first-class lab equipment, dry erase boards covered with diagrams, many of which I'd seen during my brain attacks. Things were in sleep mode, quietly humming but not working. It wasn't yet dawn. We wove our way among the tables, trying to take it all in while quaking in our boots. I knew there were erasers in this building. I could feel them. Then I saw one computer still on, its screen bright, data being processed as we watched. This could be it. Our chance to find out about our past, our parents, the whole amazing enchilada.
"Okay, guys," I said quietly. "Fan out. Stay on guard. Watch my back. I mean it. I'm going to try to hack in."
I climbed on the lab stool in front of the counter and grabbed the computer mouse.
"Password?"
I cracked my knuckles, making Fang wince.
"Well, it could only be about 100 million different things," I thought. "How hard could it be?"
I started typing. I won't bore you with the whole list of what was rejected. I was thankful that the system didn't lock me out after 3 bad tries. But school, batch elder, mother, eraser, flock, and a whole lot of other things didn't cut it.
"This is pointless," I said, my nerves frayed.
"What's wrong, Max?"
Nudge asked softly, coming to stand close to me.
"Who am I kidding?" I said. "There's no way for me to crack the password. We've come all this way for nothing. I'm such a loser. I can't stand it."
Nudge leaned closer and touched the monitor with a finger, angling it so she could see better. She read the screen, her lips moving silently. I wanted to push her away, but I didn't want to be pointlessly mean. Nudge closed her eyes.
"Nudge?" I asked.
Her hand fanned out on the monitor, as if pressing closer for warmth.
"Hello?" I said. "What are you doing?"
Try... big X, little J, little N, big P, the number 7, big O, big H, little J, and the number 4,
she said in a whisper. I stared at her. Across the room, Fang was watching us, and my eyes met his. Quickly, before I forgot, I typed in what she'd said, seeing the letters show up as small dots in the password box. I hit enter, and the computer whirred to life, a list of icons popping up on the left-hand side of the screen. We were in. Chapter 126. I stared at Nudge, and she opened her eyes slowly. A bright smile crossed her face.
Did it work?
Yeah, it worked, I said, stunned. Where'd you get it?
The computer, she said, looking pleased. Like, when I touched it.
She reached out and touched it again.
I can see the person who works here. It's a woman, with frizzy red hair. She drinks way too much coffee. She typed in the password, and I can feel it.
Wow, I said. Touch something else.
Nudge went to the next chair and put her hand on it. She closed her eyes, and a few moments later smiled.
A guy sits here, a baldy. He bites his nails. He went home early yesterday.
Opening her eyes, she looked at me happily.
I have a new skill, she said. I could do something new. This is so cool.
Good for you, Nudge, I said. You saved our butts here.
Trying to focus despite this latest mind-blowing development, I skimmed icons and right-clicked my way into Explore. I searched for Avian, School, Genetics, then, oh my god, document files filled the screen. My fingers flew across the keyboard, searching out names, dates, anything I could think of to make a connection. Origins. That looked promising, and I clicked on it. My eyes raced down the lines of text, and my throat closed. I almost went into shock on the spot. I saw our names. Names of hospitals, names of towns, even what looked like names of parents. Then I saw pictures of adults that seemed to go with the names. Were these our parents? They had to be. Oh, God. Oh, God, this was it. This was exactly what we needed. I hit print, and pages started spewing out of the printer.
What are you doing?
Fang asked, coming over.
I think maybe I found something, I said breathlessly. I knew we shouldn't stop to look over the amazing pages here. I'm going to print it, and then we should get the heck out of here.
Start getting the others together. I grabbed the pages as they came out, folding them up and cramming them into all my pockets. I didn't even know how many there were, but finally the printer stopped. I was bursting to tell the others everything, but I didn't. I bit the inside of my cheek until it hurt. See why I'm the leader?
Come on, I said urgently. Let's split, let's go.
Just a second, Max, said the gas man, sounding really, really weird.
Chapter 127. The gas man was standing by a fabric-covered wall, and with typical curiosity, he had pulled the fabric aside. Slowly, we walked over to him, six sets of eyes opened wide as saucers. When I was 2 feet away, my heart slammed to a halt inside my chest. I put my hand over my mouth to keep from screaming. Angel did scream, until Fang cupped a hand over her mouth. Behind the curtain was a glass wall. Okay, no biggie. But behind the glass was another lab room, with lab stations, computers, and cages. Cages with sleeping forms in them, child-size forms, dozens of them. Mutants, just like us.
Chapter 128.
I couldn't speak. My gaze raked the glass wall, and I saw a small pad at eye level. I went over and pressed it, and that cute, don't think it through way I have. The glass wall opened, and we tiptoed through, our nerves as taut as rubber bands. Sure enough, there were mutant kids sleeping in cages and in large dog crates. It brought my awful, gut-twisting childhood whooshing back to me, and I felt on the verge of having a panic attack. I'd forgotten about my headache for maybe a minute, and now it was back, throbbing as if my brain was getting ready to blow. Angel was looking sadly into one cage, and I went to her. Out of hundreds of genetic experiments, only we and the erasers had been at all viable, as far as I knew. The two little creatures asleep on their cage floor were clearly horrible failures and probably couldn't last much longer. What with some of their vital organs on the outside of their bodies and all. Kidneys, bowels, a heart.
Oh, the poor babies.
This is pathetic,
Fang whispered, and I turned to see him looking at a large cat, like a serval or a margay. I'd never seen a real animal in one of the labs before. Just as I was wondering what its deal was, it woke up,
blinked sleepily, then turned over and dozed off again. I swallowed really, really hard. It had human eyes, and when I examined its paws more closely, I saw human-like fingers beneath the retractable claws. Jiminy Christmas. Glancing over, I saw Angel reading the card tacked to another small cage. Its dog-like occupant was running in its sleep.
Hi, doggy,
Angel whispered.
Hi, little doggy. You look like Toto from The Wizard of Oz.
I went over to Nudge, who was standing stiffly beside a cage. I looked in. This one had wings. I caught Fang's gaze, and he came over. When he saw the bird kid, he sighed and shook his head. I actually saw sadness and tenderness in his eyes. It made me want to hug Fang. But I didn't, of course.
You know, we can't save them all, he told me softly.
I'm supposed to save the whole world, remember?
I whispered back.
Well, I'm gonna start with these guys.
There you go, Max, said the voice. That's the difference between you and Fang.
Don't you dare say anything about Fang, I thought. He's usually right. He's probably right about this now.
Is it important to be right, or is it important to do what's right? That's one of the hardest lessons to learn.
Okay, whatever, I'm really busy right now. Start popping latches,
I whispered to Iggy, who whispered to the gas man, and so on. I opened a cage and gently shook the creature inside awake.
Get ready to run,
I whispered.
We're getting you out of here.
Poor baby looked back at me uncomprehendingly. Several creatures were awake and pressing against their cage bars, making weird noises I'd never heard before. We moved as fast as we could, opening doors. Finally, most of the prisoners were free, standing around, looking at the entrance to the lab with confusion or fear. One cage held a large child who was gripping the bars. Fine features said this was probably a female. She had wings. I could see them tucked tight against her sides. She was older than the other winged child we'd seen. I quickly unlatched the door to her cage. I jumped back when I heard a voice.
Who are you? Why are you doing this?
She whispered. Kids don't belong in cages, I said to her. Then I called out in a loud voice. Okay, everybody, let's blow this joint. Chapter 129.
This way, Nudge said, attempting to herd the mutants out of the lab. Don't be afraid.
I hear voices, Iggy said. Be very afraid. Let's move it, I ordered. My heart was pounding. What was I doing? Was I going to take care of all these kids? I could barely manage the ones I had. I would think about that tomorrow. Nudge, Fang, Angel, I called. Out, out, out.
They zipped past me, urging the others, and then we ran through the first door and across the deep carpeting to the second door. Up the stairs.
I didn't have Iggy's hearing, but I felt, sensed, that our little liberation party was about to be discovered, and that would be bad.
Plan ahead, Max. Think it out. Think on your feet.
Yes, voice. Okay, we had steps, then sewer. I practically pushed the others up the dark stairs. One, two, three. One of the mutant kids freaked out and curled up in a ball, whimpering. I snatched it in one arm and kept climbing, two steps at a time. In my mind, I pictured the route we had to take. Up ahead, Fang shoved open the last door, the one into the tunnel, and we all poured out after him, moving from cool, fresh air to a hot, fetid dampness that made my nose wrinkle.
Where are we?
Asked the bird girl we'd freed. She looked about 10 years old and was one of the few who would speak. Sewer system, under a big city, I said shortly. On our way out to fresh air and sunlight.
But not just yet, Ari hissed from behind. First, we need to chat, Maximum. You and I, for old time's sake.
Chapter 130.
I went still and saw the bird girl's eyes widen in fear, too. Did she know Ari? Slowly, I handed her the small, whimpering mutant in my arms, then turned.
Back again? What are you doing here? I asked. I thought Dad was keeping you on a short leash.
His hands curled into clawed fists. I needed time. Behind me, I made run motions with one hand.
So, what happened, Ari? I said,
keeping his attention on me. Who took care of you when Jeb left with us? His eyes narrowed. I saw his canines growing visibly longer.
The white coats. Don't worry about it. I was in good hands. The best. Somebody was looking out for me.
I frowned, wondering. Ari, did Jeb give them permission to eraserify you? Or did someone just do it while he was gone?
Ari's heavily muscled body quivered with rage. What do you care? You're so perfect. The one successful recombinant. And I'm nobody, remember? I'm the boy who was left behind.
Despite everything, despite the fact I could cheerfully have kicked his teeth in for what he had done to Fang, I did feel a pang of pity for Ari. It was true. Once we were out of the school, I'd never given him a second thought. I didn't think about why Jeb had left him or what had happened to him.
Someone did terrible things to you because Jeb wasn't there to protect you, I said quietly. Shut up, he growled. You don't know anything. You're dumb as a brick.
Maybe not. Someone wanted to see if erasers would last longer if they didn't start from infancy, I went on. Ari was trembling now, his hands clenching and unclenching convulsively. You were 3 years old, and they grafted DNA into you, and they got a super eraser, right? Suddenly, Ari lunged and swung out with one clubbed paw. Even with my speed record reflexes, he managed to cuff my cheek hard enough to spin me against the gross tunnel wall. Something like pus stuck to my face. I sucked in a breath, accepting that I was about to get the stuffing beat out of me. Old Jeb, though clearly an agent of the devil, had taught us the useful art of street fighting. Never fight fair. That's not how you win. Use every dirty trick you can. Expect pain. Expect to get hurt. If you're surprised by the pain, you just lost. I turned slowly toward Ari. Out in the real world, you should be in second grade, I said, tasting salty blood inside my mouth. If Jeb had protected you.
Out in the real world, you would have been killed for the disgusting mutant freak you are.
Now the gloves were off. And you're a what? I asked in mock polite confusion. Face it, Ari. You're not just a big, hairy 7-year-old. You're much more of an obvious mutant freak than I am, and your own father let it happen.
Shut up,
Ari yelled furiously. I couldn't help it. I felt bad for him for a second. But only for a second. You see, Ari, I said conversationally, then launched myself at him with a roundhouse kick that would have caved in the chest of an ordinary man. Ari merely staggered. Staggered back a half step, not even a full one. He cuffed me again, and I saw circles and stars. He punched me in the stomach. My God, he was as strong as a team of oxen. That would be strong, right?
You're dead meat, Ari growled. I mean that literally.
Then he surged toward me, claws out, and he slipped. His boot slid on the slimy tunnel ledge, and he fell heavily to his back. So hard I could hear the wind knocked out of him, a mighty gush of air.
Get them out of here!
I shouted at Fang, barely turning my head, then instantly dropped my full weight onto Ari's chest. I could hear my heart and feel adrenaline snaking through me, turning me into Supergirl. I remembered that Ari had hurt Fang bad out at the beach, and he'd enjoyed it. Ari struggled to get up, wheezing like a large animal with pneumonia, trying to push me off. I grabbed his head with both hands, my face twisted with fury. But he had got away from me. He was so fast, faster than I was. Ari punched me again, and I thought I heard a rib crack. He was taking me apart bit by bit. Why did he hate me so? Why did all the erasers hate us?
Yes, Maximum, I am enjoying this. I want it to last a long, long time.
I was his pummeling bag now, and there was nothing I could do about it. You can't imagine the hurt and pain or his strength or the fury aimed at me. The only thing saving me from destruction was the slippery footing in the tunnel, the grime under his feet. Just then, Ari lost his balance again, and I saw the smallest opening, a chance at least. I kicked him once more, this time in the throat. Solid, a good one. Ari gagged and started to go down. I threw myself at him, grabbing his head, and we fell as one in slow motion. He was huge, heavy, and we dropped like lead.
Wham!
Butt, back, head. I held on tight as Ari's neck slammed against the hard side of the tunnel. I heard a horrible, stomach-turning crack that vibrated up my arms. Ari and I stared at each other in shock.
You really hurt me,
he gasped Raleigh, terrible surprise in his voice.
I wouldn't hurt you. Not like this.
Then his head flopped down, and Ari went totally limp. His eyes rolled up, and the whites showed. Max, Iggy was trying to sound calm. What was that?
I gulped, sitting on Ari's barrel chest, still holding his head. I think I broke his neck.
I gulped again, feeling like I might be sick.
I think he's dead.
Chapter 131. We heard angry voices and heavy, pounding footsteps on the stairs above us. No time to think, to try and make sense out of what had just happened. I jumped off Ari's lifeless body and grabbed Angel's hand. Angel grabbed Iggy, and we started running with Nudge and the gas man right behind us. I was aching everywhere, but I ran. I ran like the Dickens, whatever that is. I saw no sign of Fang and the other mutants. They'd already gone.
Fly!
I shouted, dropping Angel's hand, and she instantly leaped out over the sewer water, snapping her wings open and pushing down hard. Her sneakers dipped into the water, but then she rose again and flew off down the tunnel, her white wings a beacon in the darkness. The gas man went next, looking freaked out and pale, and Iggy took off after him. I heard a booming voice.
He was my son!
Jeb's anguished cry echoed horribly after me, bouncing off the stone walls, coming at me from all angles. I felt short of breath. Had I really killed Ari? Made him die? It all seemed surreal. The sewer, the files, the mutants, Ari? Was I dreaming? No. I was painfully awake. Painfully myself. Painfully right here, right now. I turned and looked back at Jeb, the man who'd been my hero once upon a time.
Why are you doing this? I shouted at the top of my voice. Why this game? This test, look at what you've done!
Jeb stared at me, and I remembered clearly when he was like my father, the only one I trusted. Who had he really been back then? Who was he now? Suddenly, he changed gears completely. He wasn't yelling anymore.
Max, you want answers to the secrets of life, and that's not how it works. Not for anybody, not even you. I'm your friend, never forget that.
I already have,
I yelled, then turned away, leaving Jeb behind.
Take a right,
I shouted at Angel, and she did, swerving gracefully into a larger tunnel. Just as I swerved after her, almost crashing into a wall because I banked too late, I heard one last haunting cry. Jeb had changed his tone again. He was screaming at me, and I pictured his red face, red as a stop sign.
You killed your own brother!
Chapter 132. Jeb's horrifying words echoed in my head again and again. The meaning and consequences seemed worse each time. You killed your own brother. Could that be true? How? Or was this just more theater, part of my test? Somehow we made it up to the street, where Fang was waiting. I felt faint, like I'd been hit by a truck, but I forced myself to keep moving. I remembered what was stuffed in my pockets. Names, addresses, pictures. Of our parents? Where are the other kids, the mutants? I asked Fang. So much was going on now. It was hard to keep it all straight, but it had to be done. So I did it.
The girl with wings took them, he shrugged. She didn't want to stay with us. Wouldn't take no for an answer. Sound like anyone you know?
I waved him off. I didn't want to talk about it now. Didn't want to talk about anything. I could still see Ari's eyes rolling back. Could hear his neck snapping. Just walk. Keep walking, I said, and started to limp forward. Walk the walk. It was almost 2 minutes later that I realized Angel was carrying something besides Celeste.
Angel?
I stopped in the middle of the sidewalk. What's that? Something small and black and furry squirmed under her arm.
It's my dog, said Angel, and her chin went stiff, like it always did when she was about to get stubborn.
Your what?
Fang said, peering at the object in question. We all gathered around Angel, but then I remembered how conspicuous we were. Let's move, I muttered, but this discussion isn't over, Angel. In Battery Park, down at the tip of Manhattan, a small, abandoned bandshell was almost completely hidden by overgrown rhododendrons and yew bushes. We huddled under its shelter as the rain washed dust off the city. I was wiped. I felt like I had absolutely nothing left.
Okay,
I said, sitting up straighter, trying to put energy into my voice. Angel, explain the dog.
He's my dog, she said firmly, not looking at me, from the Institute.
Fang sent me a look that said, if you let her keep this dog, I will kill you. Angel, we cannot have a dog with us, I said sternly. The dog wiggled out of her arms to sit at her side. It looked pretty normal as far as I could tell. Its bright black doggy eyes shone at me, and it was grinning in a friendly way. Its short, stumpy tail was wagging. Its nose sniffed the air happily, excited by all the new scents in the world. Angel gathered the dog to her. The gas man edged closer to look at it. And besides, you have Celeste, I pointed out.
I love Celeste, Angel said loyally, but I couldn't leave Total behind.
Total? Iggy asked.
That's what his card said, Angel explained.
Totally a mutant dog who will probably turn on us and kill us in our sleep, Fang said.
The dog cocked his head to one side, his grin fading a moment. Then his tail wagged again, insult forgotten. Fang looked at me. I got to be the bad cop and lay down the law.
Angel, I began cajolingly. We can't always feed ourselves. We're on the run. It's dangerous out here. It's all we can do to deal with us.
Angel set her jaw and looked at her sneakers.
He's the most wonderful dog in the whole wide world, she said. So there.
I looked at Fang helplessly.
Angel, he said severely.
She looked up at him with wide blue eyes, her face scrubby, clothes filthy, cornrows all fuzzy.
The first time you don't take care of him, boom, he's out, Fang said. Understood?
Angel's face lit up, and she threw herself into Fang's arms while I gaped at him. He hugged Angel back, then caught my expression. He shrugged and let Angel go.
She made Bambi eyes at me, he whispered. You know I can't resist it when she does Bambi eyes.
Total! Angel cried. You can stay!
She hugged the small, wiggling black body, then drew back to beam at him. Total gave a happy yip, then made an excited leap. And our jaws dropped. We all stared in disbelief. Total almost hit the top of the bandshell, about 16 feet above us.
Oh,
said Angel, and Total landed, almost bottomed out, then jumped up again and licked her face.
Yeah, oh,
I said.
Chapter 133.
That night, we made a small campfire and sat near the water in a part of New York called Staten Island. We were licking our wounds, especially me. I hurt all over, but I was also unbelievably excited about what I'd found at the Institute. Okay, we're all safe, all together. I took a deep breath and slowly released it. We found the Institute, and maybe we got exactly what we went there for. Guys, I found names, addresses, even pictures of people who might be our parents. I could see surprise, shock, incredible excitement on all of their faces, but also hints of fear and trepidation. Can you imagine what it's like to meet your parents when you're somewhere between 6 and 14?
I sure couldn't.
What are you waiting on? Asked Iggy. The envelope, please. Open it already. Then somebody tell me what it says.
I felt a trembling sense of elation as I started pulling out the pages I'd taken from the Institute. Here were the answers to the mysteries of our lives, right? The others gathered around me, leaning over my shoulders, helping me smooth the printed pages flat without smearing the ink.
Max, what did Jeb mean? You killed your brother?
Nudge asked out of the blue. The question was so typical of her, off in her own world again.
He didn't mean that Ari was your brother, did he? You guys weren't. I mean, triple yuck.
I held up my hand, trying not to shriek from bottled up emotion. I don't know, Nudge, I said, forcing myself to sound calm. I can't think about it right now. Let's read these pages. When someone gets to something interesting, yell. I handed out the wrinkled stacks.
Who's your daddy? Crowed the gas man. Who's your mommy?
Chapter 134. Angel started reading slowly, sounding out words.
This doesn't make sense to me, she said after about 10 seconds. Then the gas man sat up.
Here I am, he shouted. Here I am.
Let me see, Gazzy.
The gas man handed me his stack and I pored over it. Sure enough, I found his name. F28246EFF. The gas man. My heart nearly stopped.
Here's an address, I said, tracing my finger down a page. It's in Virginia.
I've got an address too, and some names, said Fang. And my name. And, oh man, there are pictures.
Let us see, let us see. Everybody gathered around Fang, and even though he's usually Mr. Calm, Cool, and Collected, he was shaking. We all were.
I myself was trembling like the temp had dipped about 50 degrees.
Nudge was pointing at a photocopy in Fang's hand. It showed a man and a woman who seemed to be in their 30s.
He looks just like you, Fang, and so does she. They've got to be your mom and dad, no doubt.
Her voice choked up, and suddenly we were all crying, except Fang, of course, who just muttered,
maybe, maybe not.
Then everybody was looking through the pages, searching for their parents. Nobody made a sound until,
here they are, my mom and dad, Gazzy shouted. 167 Cortland Lane in Alexandria, Virginia.
Angel, look, this is them. It's totally amazing. It's a miracle. They look like me. And you too, Angel.
Angel stared at the picture silently for a moment, and then her face crumbled, and she was sobbing. I instantly reached out and held her small body close, stroking her hair. Angel's usually no softy. And when I felt her shake with sobs, my chest ached with pain.
Talk about your Kodak moment, or Fuji, whatever.
There's lots of numbers and nonsense printed all over these pages, too, Fang said, bringing me back to the here and now.
I saw the same thing. Why scramble just some of the information? It doesn't make sense.
Who cares?
Gazzy yelled happily.
I found my mom and dad! Yahoo! I take back being mad at them.
Fang, Gazzy, and Angel had hit the jackpot. But so far, Iggy and I hadn't. And Nudge still wasn't sure if her rents were out west or not.
Iggy!
Iggy, your mom!
Oh,
says your dad is deceased, the gas man reported. Sorry about your dad, but your mom looks neat.
He started to describe her out loud. So then there was just one outsider. Only one of us without a mom and dad in the files from the Institute. You guessed it. Moi. I still belong to nobody, nowhere. I'd like to say that I'm such a good person, such a team player, that I didn't feel totally left out, heartachy, just about ripped apart and destroyed. But I really am trying to get the lying under control. I did feel all those terrible things, and a whole lot more. But I put on a brave face and smiled, and oohed and aahed, and reread files, being happy for my guys, who, face it, hadn't had much happiness yet in their hard, short, weird lives. But my mind, like a steel trap, couldn't let something go. So why scramble this other information? I finally asked again. Just to say something else? To put myself somewhere besides the throne of pain?
Maybe it's information the White Coats never wanted anyone to find out,
Fang said in the hollow, Twilight Zone-y voice he used sometimes when things got unusually weird, as opposed to regular weird.
Like funding, I said, thinking. Or hospitals who gave them babies. Other messed up scientists who helped them. Like the keys to the whole evil empire.
Holy Joe, said Iggy, sitting up excitedly. If we had that stuff, we could blow them wide open. We could send it to a newspaper. That fat guy could make a movie like
bowling for Columbine or something.
My heart did flip-flops just thinking about it.
I don't care about that stuff, said Nudge. I just want to find my mom and dad once and for all. Wait, this is me.
Holding her breath, she examined the information surrounding N88034GNH, Monique.
Know what?
Nudge quickly glanced from page to page.
All these addresses are in Virginia and Maryland and Washington, D.C. That's all kind of close, isn't it? Plus, D.C. is where the government is, right?
This is the coolest thing ever, said Iggy, a far-off look coming over his face. First, we meet our parents. Joyful reunion, hugs, kisses.
Then we go destroy the school, the institute, all those sons of
all those jerks who messed us up.
That would be so great. Like, we could wipe out the erasers, all of them, at once. Way cool.
So what are we going to do? The gas man asked, suddenly very serious. For real.
I want to do whatever Max does, said Angel. And so do Celeste and Total.
Total wriggled, hearing his name, and licked Angel's hand. Whatever they had done to him at the Institute, he didn't seem to be holding any grudges. Now he licked Celeste. That poor bear needed a bath in a big way. We all did. I looked at the troops. We were safe, for now. We were together.
A wave of thankfulness came over me.
We go to D.C., I said finally, and take baths. And start tracking your parents down. We have all their addresses, right?
Woo-hoo!
The gas man shouted, slapping Iggy high-five, taking him by surprise. I smiled at them. I loved them all so much, and I wanted them to be happy. I could do this for them. But inside, I felt as if black holes were eating through my chest. I had killed someone today. Maybe my own brother. Now we were going to start finding out about our past. Maybe the meaning of our lives, and I didn't know if that's what I wanted, and only partly because I had no idea who my mother and father were. But none of that mattered, right? These guys were my family. I owed it to them to try to help their dreams come true.
Even if it killed me.
Very late that night, or maybe it was early in the morning, I tried to talk to the voice. Maybe, just maybe, it would deign to answer me. I have two questions for you, okay? Just two questions. No, make that three questions. Okay. Where are my mom and dad? How come I'm the only one with no files at all? Why am I having these terrible headaches? And who are you? Are you an enemy that's inside me? Or are you my friend? The voice came right back to me.
That's more than three questions, Max. And sometimes, whether someone is your friend or enemy, is all how you look at it. But if you must know, I consider myself your friend, a good friend, who loves you very much. No one loves you more than I do, Maximum. Now listen. I ask the questions, not you. You're just here.
And the voice actually chuckled.
For the ride. For the incredible, indescribable, Maximum ride.
Epilogue. There's nothing in the whole wide world like flying in the early morning, say around 6-ish. At 15,000 feet, I could still make out the colors of cars inching along the New Jersey Turnpike below us. It felt fabulous to be wheeling in the air again, stretching my wings out fully, working out the soreness. We were flying in loose formation, coasting in one another's air wakes, smiling at nothing. We were happy to be together in the sky, way above the world that held our mysteries and our pain. Total seemed to like the wind whistling through his fur, and the altitude didn't seem to be bothering his breathing yet. I knew the others were excited about finding their parents, and I knew that I was going down that road with them, to the end of the line. Fang glanced over at me, his face smooth and impassive, though I could almost feel the anticipation rolling off his feathers. I smiled at him, and his dark eyes lit. Fang, I had to do some thinking about him. Me, I had to do some thinking about me, too. When we got to Washington, D.C., it would be either incredibly great or a totally heartbreaking disaster. Iggy thought that meeting their parents would be the ticket to safety and freedom and happiness. I wasn't that naive.
Knowledge is a terrible burden, Max,
said my voice. I sighed. Still with us.
It's a two-edged sword,
the voice went on.
It might help you, but it might put you in danger greater than anything you've faced so far.
Gotcha. But I had to do it anyway.
Max, you have a bigger mission than finding the flock's parents. Focus on helping the whole world, not just your friends.
I held my wings steadily, coasting for a long, long way on a warm updraft. It was like floating on a cloud. The best feeling you can imagine. I wish you could try it with me. Maybe next time. You know, voice, I thought, finally, my friends are my world.
Remember what I said at the very beginning? Now I'm giving you a choice. You can stop listening now, but you'll just have some of the story. Look other places for more of it. Dig even deeper, and you could become part of it. The web of answers is out there, if you can find the portal. Be careful, and don't say I didn't warn you. Max. www.maximumride.com.
This has been a Hachette Audio production of Maximum Ride, The Angel Experiment. Written by James Patterson, read by Casey Lee Heisinger. Produced and recorded at Audio Media Production. Post-production by Audio Media Production. Maximum Ride, The Angel Experiment is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. Text copyright 2005 by Sujak Inc. Audio production copyright 2014 Hachette Audio, all rights reserved. In accordance with the U.S. Copyright Act of 1976, the duplicating, uploading, and electronic sharing of any part of this audiobook without the permission of the publisher constitutes unlawful piracy and theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, prior written permission must be obtained by contacting the publisher at permissions@hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or are used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events, or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.